Would you rather have wireless on the most reliable network nationwide or unlimited with 5G for $30 a month per line? You don't have to choose with Xfinity Mobile. Wireless so good it keeps one-upping itself. Most reliable based on Roots Metric U.S. report. Results vary, not an endorsement. $30 per month per line when you get 4 lines.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Jonathan Schanzer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. The author, Jonathan Schanzer, in the new book is Gaza Conflict 2021. The war, the most recent war with Hamas, begins May 10th. However, we're going to go back 30 years to the foundation of Hamas, late 89, early 1990. It's called in Arabic, however, it stands for Islamic Resistance Movement. It was founded by a man named Ahmed Yassin, or he was a progenitor. But it, from the first, was linked to Iran. Jonathan, the Muslim Brothers, what is their link to Iran in 89-90? Because since then, the Muslim Brotherhood has become prominent in many states throughout the Mediterranean basin.
Absolutely. So the Muslim Brotherhood is a organization that was founded in the late 1920s in Egypt. It was really designed to infuse religion with politics or politics with religion. And it has grown steadily since the late 1920s, where it now spans the entire Arabic world. It is the, I would say, the foundational ideology of some of the more violent groups around the world, many of which the United States has gone to war with, such as Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Taliban, and of course, Hamas. Now, with the case of Hamas, it was very interesting. In 1987, late 1987, there was an organic uprising carried out by the Palestinians. It actually was spawned by a car accident of Palestinians returning to Gaza after a long day of work in Israel. The funerals turned into demonstrations, and the demonstrations turned into an asymmetric war that lasted for several years. The Muslim Brotherhood played a significant role in the organization of that uprising. And at a certain point, the more violent elements of the Muslim Brotherhood in the Palestinian areas decided to break away and create this organization called Hamas. And Hamas soon began to wage war against Israel in a very concerted fashion. And it soon found that it got support from elements in the Arab world and certainly from other Muslim Brotherhood countries. But Hamas emerged as the most important patron of this movement beginning by 1989-1990. And Iran has continued to play that role to this day with financing, with weapons, with training, with rockets, with know-how for the building of tunnels. Any element that you see of the Hamas war apparatus almost always tracks back to their patrons in Tehran.
And you note at one point, 1993, Iran is running training camps for Hamas fighters in Sudan, I believe, in Africa. So this is an apparatus, an infrastructure that's quite sophisticated, linking the Shiite extremists in Tehran with the Sunni extremists in Gaza with no difficulty. Correct, Jonathan? They don't. Ideological friction.
No, none at all. And in fact, you know, one of the things that we've seen is the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamic Republic of Iran, despite their sectarian differences, have a longstanding relationship. Their view is that Islamism, no matter what sect, must be the dominant force in politics and in religion in the Muslim world. And so actually, if you recall, after the revolution in Egypt during the Arab Spring, when Mohamed Morsi was the became the president of Egypt, his first meeting was with senior Iranian officials. And that was, I think, a very good sign of that longstanding relationship that we talk about here. And so the Islamic Republic has long looked for opportunities to train Hamas fighters. Sudan was an important jurisdiction. And by the way, when Sudan signed normalization agreements with Israel, it was a blow to Iran. But we've also seen that kind of training and assistance take place in jurisdictions like Syria, and perhaps even more recently in places like Turkey.
Here's a striking contrast. In 1994, the Nobel Peace Prize goes to Prime Minister Rabin and Yasser Arafat. The ostensible reason was that the Arab-Palestinian-Israeli conflict had been settled, all was well. Where is Hamas at that moment? Is it in tension with Arafat? Is it peaceful with Arafat? Is it speaking out at that moment?
It's actually, I think, probably one of the most important and forgotten dynamics of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. You have to remember that when Hamas emerges in the late 1980s and early 1990s, the PLO is actually based in Tunisia. They are in exile. They have been driven there by the Israelis after the war in Lebanon the previous decade. And so they are on the outside looking in. And Yasser Arafat realizes that if he doesn't do something drastic, he will be overtaken by Hamas. And so he engages with the West on this peace process, the Oslo process, as it's known. In retrospect, I don't believe that he actually was truly invested in peace. He saw it as a means to get back into the political game and to give him a perch once again in international politics. And when he returns triumphantly to the Gaza Strip and then begins to build the Palestinian polity known as the Palestinian Authority, Hamas is irate. They have been leapfrogged. And so it is at that point, really beginning in the 92, 93, 94 area, that we begin to see Hamas wage this brutal war. Suicide bombings and other attacks in very public areas against Israelis, destroying buses, malls, restaurants, discos. This was Hamas's decision, not just to oppose peace with Israel, but to oppose the primacy of Yasser Arafat. So they didn't only oppose his Nobel Prize. They opposed the fact that he had leapfrogged them and assumed the mantle of leadership within the Palestinian political arena and across the world. And they were determined to ruin his chances of success. And so when people talk about Hamas's goals of destroying as much of Israel as they can or killing as many Jews as possible, that's probably true. But you also have to remember that they had a second goal, and it was no less important, and that was challenging Yasser Arafat's primacy in the 1990s.
There are a number of details here, and we could follow any one of them. Israel is aware of Hamas's threat, but I want to look to Tehran. I want to step back, Jonathan, because you know Tehran's money is coming in all through the late 90s. I have $35 million. I have $99 million. Is this well known? And do the people who know this understand that the money drives Hamas, not Hamas earns the money? Do they follow the money as Hollywood recommends?
I don't believe that today there is a wide recognition of the amount of investment, the hundreds of millions of dollars that Iran invested in Hamas during those fateful years. Were it not for Iran and its financing and its training and its assistance to Hamas, I am not sure that the peace process would have collapsed as it did in the year 2000. I believe that it was Iran's goal to destroy the peace process, and they saw a willing partner in Hamas to do so. We look back now and you can see that it was the CIA that was noting this. The Israelis were noting it. Canadian intelligence was noting this. Arab intelligence was noting this, that there was hundreds of millions of dollars flowing from Tehran. Today, it is simply not acknowledged. And many people today even would make the assertion, and I had disputes with some analysts during the war itself, this most recent round in May, where they said, well, Iran did not have a direct role in this conflict. In other words, Iran didn't have advisors on the ground or they weren't giving direction. Let me just say this. You know, there is that old adage of whether you give a man a fish or you teach a man to fish. You know, in the early years, I think Iran was giving the fish to Hamas. Today, it is clear that they have taught Hamas how to fish, so to speak. Hamas has the full capability of waging war, whether Iran is directly involved or not. And that is the result of some 30 years of investment by Iran. And that makes Hamas one of its very important proxies, not the only one, but one of its important proxies in the region.
I note that Hamas began the murdering and the rocketing of civilian populations in the early part of the 21st century. The significant events, however, are immediately at hand. And when we come back, Arafat's death, what did it mean? And the civil war in Gaza, what did it mean to launch what becomes the serial Gaza conflicts these last 20 years? Jonathan Shanzer, the author of Gaza Conflict 2021, Hamas, Israel, and the 11 Days of War. When we come back, Arafat leaves the scene. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
When you bundle your car and RV insurance with GEICO, the extra savings you could get really stick with you. Just like the memory of that time you had a deep connection with a local squirrel. You were waiting outside when a beautiful gray squirrel jumped up on the table. He stared deep into your eyes as if to say, "We're not all that different, you and I." You have a bag of chips. I want your bag of chips. You will give me your bag of chips. Wherever the road takes you, go with GEICO for your RV. Bundle and you could save even more.
Invest in yourself. This fall, get the education you want for free. With PAC, first-time, full-time Connecticut Community College students can attend debt-free. With 12 campuses to choose from, you can build a future with the help of flexible schedules, expanded advisement, childcare, transportation, and other supports to succeed. Learn more about PAC, the Pledge to Advance Connecticut, at ct.edu/PACT. That's ct.edu/PACT.